God, take away my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. This is the first time I've done this. I'm Chrissy, and I'm an alcoholic. So what it was like, first I'll tell you a little bit about who I am, where I come from. I came from a long line of real alcoholics on both sides. Like, everybody, I can't think of anyone who wasn't an alcoholic, to be honest with you. Yeah, no, none of them. And my dad especially, he got sober and Alcoholics Anonymous when I was little. But before he did that, you know, he would carry around big gas station cups with, like, Coke in it and like, vodka in it. And, like, nobody knew. So I was drinking that, and I was, like, wobbly, and my cousin and I used to drink it on purpose together. Yeah, and we used to try to smoke cigarettes. I was just one of those kids that was always like, I want to be big, you know, I want to be an adult. And I thought that's what adults did, is adults drank and smoked. So, you know, I was, like, in a hurry. So my dad got sober in AA. He got the house in the divorce, and he basically had a house full of newcomers that, like, they didn't stay sober, so they were, it was like my dad up in his room sober, and then like a whole, like, five other bedrooms and a basement full of people who weren't. So when I would go there on the weekends, you know, I was drinking. God was always looking out for me, and I call my higher power God because the big book does and the steps do. But I'm talking about my God. I'm not trying to push my God on anybody else, but my God has always looked out for me. Otherwise, I mean, I probably would have been dead a long time ago. Yeah, my dad was always looking out for me. I was like a bad eighth grader, and I got sent to this private school, and I got sober in high school, with quotes. There was no program there. But I stopped doing drugs, stopped drinking, and I was like, I'm going to be a Christian, you know, all that, because it was a Christian school. It was like a God school. And so for like 3 years, that kind of got me by. And then I started drinking. I was pretty much off to the races at that point. In my early undergrad, I always made straight A's, 4.0, everything. I remember not knowing where, because I was a classics major with a concentration in Latin and Ancient Greek and Aramaic when I was my first major in undergrad. 4.0, I loved it, but, like, here's what would happen. I would be hammered, like, morning, noon, and night, like, all the time, and then it would come time for a paper to be due or, like, an exam, but especially papers, because these papers were hard. They were not easy, y'all. I mean, like, ancient philosophy papers. I gotta come up with a thesis. And it would, like, come from God, and I'm like, what is gonna happen one day if it doesn't come at the last minute? But it'd be like the day it was due, I would finally be able to be sober enough to write this paper, and then I'd have to spend an extra day coming up with some crazy excuse. And I don't know how they never caught on or why they never busted me on it, but every single paper I turned in undergrad was like an A paper with a crazy excuse, like, so that I didn't get docked. You know, and that's the way it was. Also during that time, I mean, my dad had been, I don't know how long he was sober. He was going to Easy 123 when it was in its old location. I really wanted my dad to drink with me. So my friends would all be over. I was living with him at this point. I left that part out. Kicked out all the, you know, other people. And it was just me and my dad and, like, all my drunk friends in undergrad. So we would all be drinking, and we'd be like, George, drink with us. George, drink with us. And finally he did, y'all. It went downhill pretty fast for him after that. Started smoking crack, lost that, like, was losing the house. I freaked out, and I was like, I don't know what's going on with this. All my friends, my whole life, they had always, ever since I quit doing drugs in high school, I hadn't gone back to that part of it. I was drinking a fish, no hard drugs. When my dad started smoking crack, I had one semester left in my undergrad, one semester. I withdrew from my classes, my last semester of classes, so I wouldn't mess up my GPA so that I could do meth. And, like, I'm serious, y'all. Like, it makes no, like, looking back on it, I'm so glad everyone's insane in these rooms, because otherwise I would feel crazy. Well, I mean, I am crazy. And then, since my dad was losing the house, I came up with this crazy scheme that I was going to go get this meth cook from Florida, and we were going to save the house, because, like, you know, he was about to lose the house I grew up in. Well, that went horribly awry. Next thing you know, I'm arrested for meth manufacturing, trafficking, all this kind of stuff. My plan was, before I did any of that, was I was going to go to Harvard for my master's, and I was going to do all these great things. The time that I should have been there, I was in jail, looking at lots of years. And I was terrified once I had started doing drugs, and then I realized I couldn't wake up without them, because I wasn't a pickle yet. I was still a cucumber earlier than that. And I thought I was doing drugs, and I thought all that, and it wasn't until that time period that I was like, oh my God, I can't wake up without meth. What am I going to do? I'm stuck forever. If I would have just come to AA, but no, I kept going. So, yeah, I was like, no, I don't want anything to do with AA. AA was all those people in my dad's house. AA was all those crazy people. I don't want to hang out with a bunch of drunk people if I want to get sober. All these crazy things. Well, when I was in jail, I was in there for like, I don't know, 6 months. And I could wake up without meth again. And I was like, I'm free. I'm done. I've cured it. Yay. I knew I couldn't stay sober if I stayed in Georgia. So I took off. I moved to like Florida, Indiana, south of France, Prague. Then I came back to Indiana, then I went back to Florida, and then I finally came back to Georgia, and there had been some time there. And I was like, I am ready to go back to school, and I'm ready to get a job. And then I signed up for my last semester in undergrad, and I was like, well, shit, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, ancient languages, like, I'd forgotten all my vocabulary. Like, I was like, whoa, I don't know what I'm going to do now. And I swear to God, I was watching Legally Blonde one day. My lawyer got me out of all my stuff. Like, when I finally came back to Georgia, my lawyer got all the evidence thrown out in all my cases for me and all my co-defendants. So basically, it was like a terrible time, and then it was like a clean slate out of nowhere. And I was like, God, thank you so much. But then I was like, I don't know what I want to do. Then I was watching Legally Blonde, and I was like, well, I could just do for other people, give them a second chance like was given to me. I'm going to go to law school. So that's what I did. And y'all, I thought I was sober. I thought I was killing it. You know, I went to law school. While I was just in that job in that last semester, this is when I kind of a little bit step one, because I thought I could drink like other people just because I was cured of like my drug addiction. I thought these things could happen with my boss and a bunch of coworkers. You know, it went well for a while. We would like drink after work. I would be way more hammered than them. You know, it was okay because I only lived like a mile away and I could get home like that. And then nothing ever happened except for the fact that we went to a John Mayer concert one time. Like, my boss, it never looks dirty. Shirts are always clean pressed. Well, yeah, him, his girlfriend, everybody I work with, we go to a John Mayer show. We've got like backstage passes and this is all cool. Well, I started drinking way too early. I ended up getting kicked out of that show for peeing on a potted plant. I'm talking about in front of everybody at work. You know, and I had to live with that. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Maybe I just shouldn't drink. I can't drink. So at least I learned that lesson then. When I went to law school, it was like all work. Like, everybody drank, and I was like the DD because I was like still studying. And I killed law school. Law review, advocacy council, all the things that, like, you know, are great in law school. Top of the class, everything. Look, I made it. I beat it. I used to be an addict. I remember this one funny story. We had this library project. It was a statute, and we had to go around researching it. It was like methamphetamine paraphernalia. And somebody in my group goes, what is even meth paraphernalia? And I was like, I don't know. Like, that's how it was. I just pretended like I never had a problem. And I was like, if I never hang out with anybody that does drugs, and I never hang out with, like, anybody that drinks, then I'll just be fine. I'll just be in my little world. Well, I was very wrong. My dad died in law school. My plan was to bring him back because I always, like, the guilt killed me, y'all, for getting him back drinking because, you know, I thought I was that powerful that I could make somebody relapse. I thought I was powerful enough to make everything better, too. And, like, my whole plan for going to law school was, like, I was, because my dad had, like, been shipped off to Louisiana, like, in exile, like Napoleon. You know, he used to, like, be a middle-class guy, and then he was just a person without a home, you know, living in, like, at the Knight's Inn in Norcross or something. It was terrible. Shipped him off, like, Napoleon. And I'm in law school, and I was going to bring him back, but then he got lung cancer. So he came back to die. And he died during my evidence final. I never, ever recovered from that. And then my grandfather died, my dog died, everybody died. Well, actually, not everybody yet. It was just those, my dog, my grandfather, and my dad. And I was like, holy shit. So how did I respond? Well, I'm an addict. I just started taking way too much Adderall because I was in law school and, like, it was my prescription. But I still made it through the end of all that. I was working at the number one plaintiff's firm in Georgia. It was like right there across from Perimeter Mall and like the Ravinia. Everybody had a driver but me. I was not sleeping at all. I was trying to get all my work done, like barely hanging on. I never recovered after my dad died. It just got worse and worse and worse, even though it took me forever to some years to actually pick up again. It just kept getting worse. And then I started dating this cop. Full suits every day. He's like a cop. And I'm like, I don't know how to wake up, but I do know somehow by accident that if I like accidentally shocked myself, then it's like I slept 10 hours. So I was like trying to figure out ways to shock myself awake after getting 45 minutes of sleep every night. And then I was like, well, Mike's got a taser. That's the cop. So every morning before work, you know, I would like hold one end, hold the other end, and then engage it with my toe and, like, shock myself awake. And that's how I went to work every day. That's not the best part. Here's the best part. Maybe a month goes by, and here comes Mike. Here comes Mike with, like, this manila folder in the door one day. He said, we're going to have a talk. And I was like, what? Well, he's a cop. It was a duty weapon. Every time I did that, it took a picture of me and sent it, like, somewhere to, like, his boss or something. I swear to God. So he's got, like, these pictures of me, like, and he got written up for failure to secure his duty weapon. And all this is getting to the fact, it was unmanageable. And I thought I was managing. I'm like, this is great. You know, I was always holding on to that. I had so much contempt prior to investigation against AA that would have saved me so much heartache. But it was heartache I needed, obviously, because it happened. I had one friend that I still talk to that did meth, and she was safe. She lived in Florida. She came up one day. I was like, well, I can just do it with her because she's just visiting. She's going to go back to Florida. So there you go. And then her grandfather died, and she stayed for months. The next thing you know, I was way worse than I ever was before. The cops found my needles, and it was kind of over after that. Was off to the races. I got fired from my last, I was working at a workers' comp firm. I got fired from that. And I was just living in hotels like, you know, like everybody else, you know, back in the day. That was fun. I can't say at that point in my life, I mean, I went full into debauchery. I was like, right after I got fired, it was the first time I got arrested. And I was like, well, can't practice with a felony. May as well just live in hotels and be like everybody else. So I did that. And got arrested a bunch more times because COVID hit. My brother died, and then my aunts, like three of them, they got sick one at a time, and then they died. And I couldn't go see them when they were dying because, like, I just couldn't handle the fact that they were going to die. And so I couldn't go see them. And then as soon as they died, I was like, oh, I missed my last chances with them. I woke up every morning. I would like, feel guilt, and I would just change the way I felt all the time for a while. And then finally, you know, it all caught up with me. I did 6 months in jail, and they were going to put me on drug court. And we're about to get to what happened. That was all what it was like. But what happened was I got out of jail. I was going to go to drug court. And, well, actually, this is the very last part of what it was like, because I was like, if I do meth again before I go into drug court, this is after I got out of Cherokee County, I was like, well, I'm definitely never going to make it to drug court if I do meth, so I'll just smoke crack until they swear me in. I swear to God, y'all, insane brain. This is terrible. Yes, that's what I did. And then when they swore me into drug court, like, 3 months later, this was, like, October 27th, 2023, when I've been sober since November 3rd, 2023. And right now, we are at October 27th, 2023, so we're almost there. It was drug court, and every Friday we go to court. The first Friday I went in, and I was like, I kind of didn't tell y'all, but I kind of picked up a crack problem, so if you could just put me in jail for a little while and help me dry out. Well, anyway, they sent me to rehab. Thank God, because when I was in rehab, it finally hit me. I was reading How It Works, and it was like, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I was like, well, they said rarely. I could be an exception, but maybe I won't be. So I sort of came to scoff and stayed to pray. I was like, I'm going to give the whole thing a shot. I'm going to do this and just see what happens. I mean, if it doesn't work, then it just doesn't work, and it's no different than it is now. Oh, and I had this boyfriend at the time, and we were going to be sober together. We were, like, going to be this sober couple together. Great. Good plans. So I get out of rehab. I've got this sober boyfriend, and we're, like, sober together all the way up until St. Patrick's Day when he relapses. And I was like, and man, that was such a turning point because, oh, and I had gotten a sponsor and I had started working the steps. I had just started step four. Well, I can't stay sober if he's relapsed. And I left him at the storage unit and I never looked back. But I wish I could say that was when I started doing well in the program, but that's not my story. Because instead of that, I just stayed in bed. I got in bed and I stayed there depressed, not getting out of bed at all. For like I don't even know how long, but it was a long time, like 8 or 9 months. I mean, it was so bad. I gained like 90 pounds. Like, usually I have my hair in a bun. It became a dreadlock, and nobody knew because it just looked like a bun, but I was like, I can't get this out. But that's how much time I spent in bed, y'all. I would not recommend it. The misery that brought me into this program was that white knuckling it that I did for, like, I do not recommend that. And then my drug court, they said, you got to start going back to in-person meetings. So I started going to Knots Landing in Duluth, Monday through Friday at noon. This was like early October 2024. The rest of October I was just, you know, in the meetings, and then the little thing came around for November, the little sign-up sheet, and I signed up to chair because I had like a year at that point. And I said, how am I supposed to do this? And Robert said, ask your sponsor. And I was like, I was like, oh God, I haven't talked to my sponsor in forever. Ah, I'm not looking back on that one. So I got a brand new one. I prayed first. I said, God, please give me a sponsor. It's going to put me in uncomfortable situations from which uncomfortable situations I will grow. And that's what I got. She was like, call me at 9 a.m. Call me at 9 p.m. Not planning meetings aren't good enough. You have to go to night meetings. So I was going to like 2 meetings a day, and I was calling her. It didn't end up working out with her just because of our schedules. And like 3 months later, I wasn't in the steps yet. So I just kept praying about it. God, give me another sponsor. Whichever one I'm supposed to have. You know what you're doing. Then I got Tina, my sponsor now. And I got sponsor matched by somebody in Knott's Landing. I called her, and she's like, well, you have drugs in your background. We're not going to be a good fit. But let me introduce you to Tina. And let me just tell you, y'all, God knows what he's doing, because I have a whole, everyone, you know, it's like I have a huge family now and like people that I can call every day just because I prayed, I gave it to God, the sponsor thing, and now I have the best sponsor I ever could have asked for, and she started taking me through the steps. I mean, step one was easy. It was obviously unmanageable. You know, obviously that was not a hard one, and I was definitely powerless. But see, the drugs thing, I was so glad that I peed on that potted plant, because like it told me that like I cannot. There's this meme and it says, when your coworkers ask you why you don't go out for drinks with them after work, and then there's one guy, he's like, I'll smoke crack. There's another guy, he's like, I'll rob you. And this other guy's like, I'll be homeless in 9 hours. That's me. And I never would have known that if I hadn't peed on the potted plant. But I have a problem with alcohol. I've always had a problem with alcohol. Powerless over it. And I'm powerless over a lot of things. Powerless over drugs, powerless over my relationship, well, powerless over any other person's part and any relationship I have, powerless over everything at some point or another. But there are things that I have some power over, and that was, I'm learning that. I was already comfortable with the whole God thing. I wasn't one of those people who was mad at God, but I felt really distant from God. I knew that he could restore me to sanity. I knew that. If anybody could, it was definitely God. And so I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to him. And that's hard sometimes. It's sometimes when I give something to God, it's got claw marks all over it. But it's true what it says in the big book, that giving my life over to the care of my higher power is the keystone and the triumphant arch through which I'm going to walk. And if y'all don't know what that is, it's the very top stone in an arch that holds the whole thing together. Like you can build up a whole arch. It can be tall. It can support a whole wall. But if you don't have this one stone at the very top, it's all going to come down. And I understand that now. And in step four, when I was doing my inventory, is when I finally understood that I wasn't responsible for like what happened to my dad. I wasn't responsible. Like, I wasn't supposed to spend time with those aunts. Oh, and my stepdad died. He died too. So it was just my mom. My mom and me left. That's all that's left. And I definitely damaged that relationship whenever I left her alone with all of her family dying. Yeah, step four, I just felt so relieved to know that, like, I'm not that powerful. Thank God. You know, I really thought I was. Some point during step four, I was, like, watching old Disney movies, race car driver, and he was like, oh, I'm about to give up race car driving because I'm not winning. And then he bought this Volkswagen Beetle, and then all of a sudden he starts winning all these races, right? His name was Herbie. I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking about. Yo, I cried at this movie. I'm doing my step four, and I'm watching this, and I'm bawling because I'm like, he doesn't know that the car is driving. He thinks he's driving. And I realized that when I was doing well, when I was building my life up, you know, after that, you know, when I was in law school and I was doing all those great things, I wasn't driving the car. You know, it was like God was giving me those things and I was not giving God the credit for it at all. I thought it was all me. I was electrocuting myself awake. I didn't have to do any of that. You know, and so God had to humble me again. So when I'm sitting in rehab that time and I'm like, why did this happen to me? I needed it. And I don't regret the past, and I don't wish to shut the door on it at all. And then we got to step five, and getting, you know, Tina told them all to me when we did step five. And none of them, not a one surprised me, not one. But when I started getting into six and seven, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. That hit me like a ton of bricks one day, because I was like, well, damn, I'm not asking God to get rid of all my defects, just the ones that get in his way. And let me tell you something, even when I mess up, or I think I mess up, I watch God use that. Every single day I pray, ever since we went through step seven, actually step five, and I started really praying. Started praying to see the good, the gifts, and the God and everything. When I got to step eight, I prayed that every single day I could do the right thing no matter how I felt about it. Do the right thing no matter what the consequences may be. And I pray that every morning. Sometimes I think I mess up. And it was not the right thing to do, but I watch God take it and do something good with it anyway. Because I'm not that powerful. There are no mistakes, really. You know, there are no accidents. And it's all going according to plan. And let me tell you what, like, that's why, you know, in step nine, when I started doing my amends, and most of my people are dead, but my mom's a big one, and it's hard to do. She lives directly across the street from me, y'all. I moved across the street from her so I could try to make things better. And at first, all I did was make things worse. But Max tells me that if I keep doing it, I will be amazed in like a year's time. And I know that he's right. I know that he's right. Step 10 is special. It says in the book that, you know, if something messed up happens to me and I'm feeling some kind of way inside, that I pray about it, I talk to a fellow about it, I make amends if I've messed up, and that I resolutely turn my attention to someone I can help. I call that tent stepping, and when I feel messed up inside, I call my sponsor, or I talk to Mac and Kathy, or I talk to one of my fellows about it. And it's not a conversation that ends up with, like, you know, whose tires are we going to slash? It's like, well, what was your part in that? You know, what can you learn from this? And as a result, I grow as a person. And every day, I spend so much time, like, in conscious contact with God. Like, I wake up every morning with one eye, because only, like, this eye opens first. And it's, like, beside me. And I say my prayers. I'll show you what they look like now. Because I say them every day with one eye open. Every day, I say these prayers. I have them all memorized, of course. And, like, when I feel lost or sad or afraid or stressed out, I recite those prayers out loud, and it helps me so much. And it keeps me not at the wheel of my own car, because it's the car that's driving. It's God that's driving the car. You know, it's not me. When things happen, step 12, I get to sponsor other people, and it's awesome. And I do try to practice these principles in all my affairs, but I love sponsoring people. One of my sponsors is here tonight, and she's doing awesome. She really is. It's so nice to watch people grow. Like, I have one sponsee, she's got like almost 2 weeks sober. We're about to be on step two, and I didn't know if I would be able to help her, because I was like, whenever I talk to her, it's like she's not even looking at me, and I know she's not listening to me. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and she's like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. And I was like, that's not helpful. And then I called Frank about it, actually. And I freaked out to him about it. But then the next day, it's like the more and more time that got between her and the last drink, like, she's like a totally different person now. And I'm like, oh my God, this program is amazing. It's amazing to watch. And I love it. And now, what's it like now? It's awesome. Like, and I'm on a pink cloud, and I don't know when it's going to stop. I mean, stay tuned, I guess. But, like, every day I'm happy. I live happy, joyous, and free. And I'm not stressed out about anything. It's like, will I practice law? Who knows? Will I open a nonprofit? Who knows? Because I don't worry about it. I worry about helping God's kids, and I let God worry about me. I really do that. And every time I've got claw marks on something, I'm like, God, I'm sorry about the claw marks. Because I really just try to just give it over. And it works.
First I slip, and then I quit. To a hope-filled dream. Rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God walks by, we walk eternally. Look into love's window. Take me where the promise is.